Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Let's jump straight to what we have in store for you in this edition of Africa Link. Cash tap runs dry. Germany pulls out of a donor partnership with Malawi. What this could mean for ordinary Malawians.
This particular pulling out from the budgetary support arrangement will affect sectors like health, like agriculture.
The great divide, the widening gap between Ghana's rich and poor.
If we watch our fingers not equal. So if I see someone is rich than poor, I'm just praying that I may reach the place is rich.
And as part of our Africa on the Move segment, we meet a Kenyan entrepreneur passionate about books. So passionate that he started a one-of-a-kind mobile library to get Kenyans reading. I'm Crispin Wakideo, and you're listening to Africa Link from our studios in Bonn.
Top story.
Starved of cash, Germany has pulled out of a donor support partnership with Malawi. This means that Germany, Malawi's development partner since independence, will no longer provide direct support for Malawi's national budgets. Instead, Peter Woeste, the German ambassador to Malawi, said Berlin will now take on an observer role and is exploring alternative ways of supporting Malawi. From Blantyre, George Mhango reports.
The announcement came as a big shock to the government of Malawi, which depends on Germany for almost $14 million annually to fund its budget. In a press statement, the German ambassador to Malawi, Peter Woeste, said Berlin's decision to withdraw budgetary support to its Southeast African counterpart is to analyze how Malawi has been using German taxpayers' money. Donors in the Common Approach to Budget Support Cuts group have also been delaying funds for Malawi's 2013-2014 budget. This delay comes after reports that the government has mismanaged state resources and failed to prosecute officials accused of overseeing projects that never materialized. The government is embroiled in a 6.1 billion kwacha, that is $14.5 million corruption scandal, locally known as Cashgate. On the streets of Blantyre, news of Germany withdrawing direct financial aid to the government has caused outrage among Malawians.
How do we have better education, health facilities, good roads with this development? I think government has to justify the matter because it seems Lilongwe is away.
What this means is that there's loss of trust in the government by Germany. I think Germany is not happy with looting of taxpayers' money because even justice has not been executed.
Ambassador Woeste stated in his press release that it is important for the people of Germany to know, and I quote, every cent of their hard-earned taxpayers' money reaches those who are really in need and brings relevant improvements to their livelihoods, end of quote. A Blantyre-based socio-economic commentator, Odupaso Mzungu, describes the decision as an interesting development, adding that there are more reasons behind such decision.
The decision by Germany is good. It will teach Malawians or Malawian government to start planning and budgeting using its own locally generated resources. On the other hand, it's bad news because for Germany just to pull a surprise to say, no, today we are no longer providing you with assistance, it means that Malawi government will have problems to come up with a budget that will really make an impact on the lives of the people.
Last year, CABS withheld about $150 million meant to help Malawi cushion its balance of payments and beefs up Lilongwe's foreign exchange reserve. Germany had been skeptical about its financial support even before then. In 2011, it froze finances for the general budget but kept support for emergency budget only. Whether or not the European nation will resume its direct financial aid to the government anytime soon remains unknown.
George Mhango in Blantyre. President Joyce Banda's government has come under intense scrutiny from the donor community following revelations of a number of corruption scandals. This includes the Cashgate scandal, in which Transparency International says an estimated $100 million went missing from government coffers. So does that scandal have anything to do with Germany stopping their budget support to Malawi? A question I asked Agustin Magolo-Wondo, Africa Regional Programme Coordinator at the Netherlands Institute for Multi-Party Democracy in Lilongwe.
Probably this is actually the most decisive factor that has been considered because it doesn't really come as a big surprise given the developments that have evolved till this time.
Malawi's national budget itself relies about 40% on donor support. What impact could Germany's pullout have on ordinary Malawians?
That's yet to be assessed, but obviously if the resources are not going to be channeled through other alternative means, this is going to have a serious negative effect. As a matter of fact, Germany was and remains one of the most important development partners for Malawi. So this particular pulling out from the budgetary support arrangement will affect sectors like health, like agriculture, which actually already have in place sector-wide arrangements through which, you know, different donors pull their resources together. Unless it's a temporary decision, we will experience, not in, in a distant future, quite serious negative effects.
Well, Malawi is just about to go for a general election in a few weeks' time. Could Germany change its stance if a new government is ushered in?
It's more than just having elections. I think it's more to do with what kind of measures an administration is going to take to ensure that the issues that have resulted into this particular decision being taken are being resolved. Already, of course, the current administration is pursuing various kinds of cases to address this particular issue. But as you rightly put it, it's an election time. The election campaign is now overshadowing these other important issues. We have to wait and see what is happening after elections, but sure, it's going to be more to do with what exactly are the concrete measures an administration is going to take that will lead to any reverse of this particular kind of decision.
Would you say that the president has not given the Cashgate scandal much attention that it deserves?
I think she has tried her best, but we have to accept also that there are political realities on the ground. And it is quite obvious that some key people that are supposed to be pursuing these particular issues are themselves also involved in the election campaign.
Augustine Magolo-Wondo in Lilongwe.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Not all growth is good growth. Ghana has often been lauded as Africa's success story. After all, this was the first African country US President Barack Obama visited way back in 2009. And according to the World Bank, Ghana ranks as one of the fastest growing economies in the world. But behind the impressive numbers and democratic credentials lies an untold reality: the rising gap between the rich and the poor. A conference weighing in on the same topic has just ended in the capital, Accra. Isaac Aleji with this report of what one could call the other side of Ghana.
In 2010, Ghana's economy attained a middle income status after a rebasing exercise to include contributions of other sectors into the country's gross domestic product figure. Many Ghanaians expected this to have translated into their living conditions, but that doesn't seem to be the case 4 years on.
I'm not okay. I know that by the grace of God, it will be okay. I'm a taxi driver. My income is sometimes it's okay, but sometimes I'm just passing through it.
Simon Brimer is from the Bongo district of the Upper East region of Ghana. The region is part of the three regions north of Ghana where poverty is high among the people. Simon depends on his 30 euros a day proceeds from the taxi cab he drives to feed his wife and two children. He must save from that to pay the school fees of his wards. He says it has been challenging but hopes for some improvement soon.
God didn't do us one. If we watch in our fingers not equal. So if I see someone is rich than poor, I'm just praying that I may reach the place is rich.
On the contrast, Elvis Agbeko, who is from the middle class, is comfortable with his pregnant wife. Even before they welcomed their first child, Elvis says he's well prepared to be a father. He talks about the many opportunities that abound in the capital, Accra, to support him, which are absent from the north of Ghana, where he volunteered some services a couple of years ago to support poor schools.
In the south, there is a lot of opportunity. Even when you go to school, the teachers are here. Some of the schools, even the teachers are even more than there. But going to the northern sector is very difficult. I can't remember where I did my national service. I was teaching two classes together, one teacher, combine them together. So that's opportunity. And so, in the south, there's a lot of opportunity.
According to civil society groups like Christian Aid and Tax Justice Network that have been working on the inequality rates in Africa, Ghana's income inequality rates went up by 50% between 1986 and 2006. The trend has worsened, according to the group's recent investigations. Jichi Tano of Third World Network and a social development analyst explains why the inequality levels have widened between dwellers in the north and south of Ghana.
It's a fact that parts of our country, as a result of the pattern of development that colonialism established in this country, there are parts of the country from the north, for example, where there's a systematic discrimination, a systematic lack of equal opportunity which has attended those regions and people from there.
Ghana's President John Mahama, who attended the conference as chair of ECOWAS, blamed the widening gap between the rich and the poor in his country and other African nations on the breakdown of traditional African family systems.
Already in Africa, the extended family system that guaranteed that each was his brother's keeper, that children grew up in families lavished with love by an army of grannies and aunties, and that elderly people could live their twilight years in care, love, and security without being committed to old people's homes, is breaking down.
That report was compiled by Isaac Kalechi in Ghana.
Africa on the Move.
Picture this. A former biomedicine student on a beaten-up bicycle with a green backpack strapped on his back. Nothing special, of course. However, instead of being involved in some medical or experimental science work, as one would expect, Vincent Onyango moves from place to place on his bicycle, lending out books. He now has over 3,000 books and hundreds of clients. He has taken it upon himself to improve the reading culture of people in Kisumu, Western Kenya, and makes a living out of it. Our correspondent John Marwa took a bike ride alongside him and sent us this report.
I am accompanying Vincent Onyango in Kenya's Lake Victoria city of Kisumu as he seeks to lend out his books to his clients. It didn't take long for us to meet one of them.
I think this time around, you are going to give me a waiver.
I'll do so.
Book do you think I'm going with now?
Let me see if I can give you one.
Give me a book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let me see what you have quickly. Where is that? The Ile Ilienda na Nancy Kwapi?
Nancy, no, she has not brought it back.
No. There is a big, it came back.
I know it.
Hello. How are you? Yeah, you gave a promise and I wish you to,
This is, this one makes me more of a radical.
Which ones?
33 strategies of war. I'm going to read more about stress relief.
Okay, so anytime.
I think I read about stress relief.
Okay.
Love and marriage. I think I'll go for this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're going for the...
I'm going with the two. Initially.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. So see you once
I owe you 100 shillings. Plus a waiver.
Okay.
Have a good day.
You just give me a call.
And with that conversation with one of his many reading clients, Vincent Onyango has just made an extra 100 Kenyan shillings, an equivalent of 1 euro. To get an idea of who some of his clients are, I spoke to one of them, a teacher by the name Mr. Mochache.
I am a school teacher.
Okay.
So he comes to schools, he passes around schools and other organizations, I think. Mm-hmm. So he gets clients through such places.
Mm.
Then I'm one of them. And okay. I'm proud to be associated with this man, Vincent. Vincent. I call him Vincent Bookman.
When did you become his member, his client?
It's been a while, since November last year.
Vincent gets most of his books from his brother who resides in the U.S., he also gets local books from Kisumu and Nairobi. With almost 3,000 books, Vincent told me he earns enough income to support his wife and daughter and even save.
I charge a book 50 shillings per week, which I think is really, really, really peanuts, now I'll say. Because now a book worth over 1,000 shillings, you get valuable information that worth 1,000 to 50 shillings. Don't you think it's something that... I'm easing the going for most people who actually cannot afford to buy books every time because most books are expensive.
Kenyans are generally believed not to be so keen on the culture of reading books. This has been made worse with the advent of the internet. But Mochache says Vincent's idea of operating a mobile library could change that.
Vincent is a door-to-door man. Maybe at times we are overburdened by his stress. But you find these guys on your door. He accepts borrowing. It is only a phone, and then I get him. Like now I told him I'm here at Safaricom. The shop is right there. And that is the advantage of his mobility.
Vincent told me requirements for one becoming a member of his ever-expanding library are very simple.
I need to know where you work or where you stay. Secondly, I get your phone number. Thirdly, I know people who know you.
Vincent Onyango says he has never regretted abandoning his master's course on biomedicine. And with every pedal push he takes, he is hoping to move Kenya's reading culture ahead.
John Marwa reporting from the Lake Victoria city of Kisumu, Western Kenya. And while people in Kisumu can choose whether to read or not to read books, in the Central African Republic, only one thing matters: staying alive. 16 civilians, including three aid workers, were killed on Monday, Doctors Without Borders reported. This comes as the last batch of Muslims was escorted out of the capital Bangui by African Union peacekeepers. Observers say the country is on the verge of a split between Christians and Muslims. Isaac Mugabe with this report by Philip Sandner.
Liberation was the cry heard from hundreds of Christians in Bangui, capital of Central African Republic, as they stormed a district known as Pike Trove. They were rejoicing at the departure of some 1,300 Muslims who are leaving the city in a convoy of trucks escorted by soldiers of the African Union Mission in Central Africa, MISCA. The soldiers just watched as Christians plundered the houses of the fleeing Muslims. This was yet another lamentable development in the country that has steadily become caught up in a spiral of violence between the Muslim and Christian population groups since the ousting of former President Francois Bozize. After seizing power in a coup, Michel Djotodia declared himself interim president. Djotodia is a Muslim who distanced himself from the Muslim Seleka Alliance, which he then formally dissolved. But the militia members continued with their acts of violence against the population unhindered, causing Djotodia to resign in January 2014 as a result of international pressure. He was replaced by Catherine Samba Panza, a Christian. However, since Jotodia's departure, the Muslim minority no longer seems to feel safe in the capital. Thierry Vicolo of the International Crisis Group told DW that the Muslims no longer feel safe.
Most Muslims are leaving the cities in the west as well as in Bangui. This is because they are surrounded by a hostile population as well as some Christian anti-Balaka militia.
The militia groups were formed in response to the Seleka Alliance's coup in 2013. Since then, the conflict between the two groups has raged throughout the entire country. The Muslims in Bangui see themselves predominantly as victims. Abubakar Amjoda is a Muslim who lives in the PK district, another mainly Muslim part of Bangui, but now also wants to leave. All remaining Muslims would like to move to the Muslim north.
The choice was between a bad and a very bad solution. The decision was taken for the bad solution, but at least that considerably reduced the risk of people being murdered.
For Thierry Vicolo, the evacuation is an emergency move in a crisis situation which looks set to continue for a long time.
The choice was between a bad and a very bad solution. The decision was taken for the bad solution, but at least that considerably reduced the risk of people being murdered.
But human rights organizations are concerned by this development. Amnesty International, quoted by Germany agency EPD, speaks of a short-term solution while the Society for Threatened Peoples warned in a press release of a division of the country into a Christian-dominated south and a Muslim-dominated north. The capital Bangui, with its mainly Christian population, lies in the south, while the northeast is still under the control of Seleka rebels. Although the government under interim president Samba Panza is committed to bringing about reconciliation between different population groups, there is a lack of functioning administrative structures for the government to fulfill its wishes.
That report by Philip Sanna was presented by Isaac Mugabe.
Making a difference.
Flashback. Almost 30 years ago, a group of US musicians, including the late pop icon Michael Jackson, teamed up to sing We Are the World. Their aim, to raise money for hunger victims in Africa. Fast forward 2014. a group of African musicians team up to sing about food security in the continent. With their voices, they aim to make a difference, as Samuel Okoya reports from Lagos. Oh yeah. Everywhere that you want to go, I will surely take you to any food that you want to eat. I will surely go with you, baby, just be confident.
That's a song with a clear message on how Africa should deal with key issues of food insecurity and job creation for Africa's growing young population. What's special about it is that it was done by 19 African music stars from 10 different African nations. This include Tanzania, Nigeria, Kenya, South Africa, and Algeria. Danton Putuputu is a Nigerian-born musician based in France. He explains the reason behind their initiative.
We believe that agriculture is the greatest instrument or weapon to fight poverty, hunger in Africa. So it's expedient that we, as musicians, come together to support this great initiative so we can reclaim the future of Africa.
In an effort to make their message heard across Africa, the musicians sang in 10 languages. This include English, Arabic, French, Swahili, Pidgin English, Portuguese, and Xhosa. Dr. Sifo Moyo, Executive Director of One.org for Africa, the organization which worked in conjunction with the musicians to produce the music, says the title of the songs carries an important message.
So the title of the song is Coconut Chocolate. And coconut chocolate is sort of a pigeon, is pigeon for cocoa is chocolate. So already that tells you about the transformation process, you know, from the cocoa pods in the plantations in Ghana and, you know, with West Africa and Cote d'Ivoire and so on, to the chocolate in Switzerland and Belgium and so on. It tells you the journey of what's happening. And it really is saying, why can't we even begin to transform that cocoa to chocolate?
Unde Idifonka, a musician from Cameroon, was one of those involved in producing the song. He said it is remarkable that African musicians have come together to campaign for an improvement in agriculture on the continent, about 30 years after some American musicians undertook a similar initiative when they sang the song We Are the World as part of efforts to raise funds for victims of famine in Ethiopia.
But now the big difference being that this time it's no longer Americans saying we can change Africa. And now it's Africans saying, hey, we don't need anybody to speak for ourselves. Speak for us, we can speak for ourselves. We've grown as musicians, we've grown as a continent. And very importantly, we're not asking for help as We Are the World did. The language has changed. Now we are saying that Africans can do it for themselves. Our governments can do it. All they need to do is make the proper policies to see a change. And that's what we're asking for.
Some of the goals the African musicians are trying to achieve through their song are very much in line with the 8 United Nations Millennium Development Goals, the prime objective being eradication of extreme poverty and hunger by 2015.
Samuel Okoya with that musical report from Lagos. And before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. Germany's aid withdrawal from Malawi's national budget will affect key sectors of the country, an analyst has told this program. We've been hearing about the rising gap between Ghana's rich and poor, which could lead to a clash of economic classes. And the Central African Republic could be headed for a split after most of the Muslims left the capital, Bangui. And that's all we had for you. For comments and suggestions, send us a text message to +49 160 957 59510. An email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Thanks for listening. I'm Crispin Wakideu, and bye for now.